So, it is March the 9th at
1:20.
At 1:20 p.m., I am with Odd and Becky Brown, and we are at their house. So, thank you all for taking the time to talk with me. Are you aware this is being recorded?
Yes.
Okay, so when and where were y'all born?
I was born in Clay County in 1950. Born at home, delivered by my great-grandmother, and we basically lived in Clay County all of our lives.
So this part of Braston is still Clay County, right?
Yes.
Okay. I was born in Murphy and lived in Brasstown all my life, and except for a couple of years.
We're home for... usual?
Yeah, pretty much so for us. Now, my younger brother was born 2 years later, and he was born at the hospital.
Okay.
But up until that time, all of us children were born at home.
Okay. Were you born at the hospital?
I was born in the hospital, yes.
So who raised you
both? Who raised me?
Yeah.
I was fortunate to live in a one-family unit. My dad was Ralph Brown. My mother was Elvita Lance Brown. And we lived in Lance Cove until 1955. I would have been 5 years old then when we moved out on to the 64 Highway. Not very far away from where I was born and then grew up there. And still in the Sweetwater community.
I was born in 1953 to Ralph Myers and Betty Lovell Myers. And we lived at Brasstown, the same place where they lived when they got married. And my dad's still there today. He's 97 years old and still there today.
So you've always lived in Brasstown, and then you've always lived in Clay County. When did you move to Brasstown? Or were you always in Brasstown?
No. In 1970, I lived in Martin's Creek for about a year because I had become pastor of the church over there. And then in 1971, Becky and I got married, and we lived at Martin's Creek for a little while, but in 1972, we moved back to Clay County, near where I grew up, and near where she grew up.
Mm-hmm. That was my only year out of Cherokee, out of Clay County, into Cherokee County. I went to Martin's Creek for a year.
Okay. And when did y'all move to this house?
1975.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about y'all's upbringing, so like some memories from it, from growing up from this area.
Well. I guess for myself, when I was 5 years old, we were still living in the Lance Cove of Clay County. Lance Cove had been notorious for its moonshine.
Okay.
And so my mother's folks were involved in that. But my dad had gotten saved before I was born, I suppose, and he was very much of an alcoholic or drunkard, they would call them back then. But I had a little I had a little sister who would have been older than me that died when she was, I think, 13 months old. At that time, my dad got saved. Mm-hmm. And so I never did know him as a drunkard. That would have been between 1950 and 1955. Mm-hmm. And so I guess Dad would have gotten saved just a bit before I was brought into this world. And We always went to church. Anytime there was a church service, we would want to be there. My mom was my Sunday school teacher at church. She would read the Bible to us at home, and it wasn't unusual for us to pray. In 1955, we moved out of the Lance Cove to 64 Highway, which was only a couple of miles away from where we were living. The church was real close by where we lived there. And I guess when I was about 10 years old, I was saved at the Sweetwater Baptist Church. But church was always a big part of our life. My dad worked with the State Highway Department. We had a small family farm, cows and chickens and pigs and horse and such. But not a lot of difference from other people around us. Mm-hmm. I grew up, you know, learning to plow a mule or a horse and plow our gardens, and horses were still very much used in those days. I don't know if all of this is necessary or not.
Okay.
But I've talked so much and I've forgotten what the question was.
No, you're okay. Tell me about your upbringing and stuff like that. That was good.
Yeah, and so I guess I was saved when I was maybe like 11 years old, 10 or 11, and that was a very big thing in my life. Mm-hmm. It was something that I knew happened. Mm-hmm. And always in church and wanted to be in church. I grew up milking the cow at home, feeding hogs, and weeding the garden. We always had to have a big garden because Mother canned a lot of stuff, froze a lot of stuff, so that we'd have food during the winter time. Just as a lot of other people around us did also. You learn to talk like you hear people talk.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of the mountain culture that was involved with the language.
Mm-hmm.
My dad used such words like nary one, seed. I seed somebody do something. And of course you grew up talking that way.
Yeah.
And then in school, you know, I finally begun to see how that those words were pronounced and such.
Mm-hmm.
I've often thought about my Aunt Laura. Back in those days, everybody's name, ladies just about had an IE added to whatever their name was. And so instead of Laura, we called, she was called Lurie. And there's probably some others, but she's the one that mainly stands out to me.
My great-grandmother's name was America, and they called her Murky.
It was, as I look back on it, it was one of the best lives that lives that a person could possibly have.
Mm-hmm.
And our home became there on in Sweetwater Community next to the church. It's where I grew up, and the home that we lived in to begin with was just a two-room house when we moved there, and my dad added two more rooms to that old house. And then in 1960, they built a new home, a new house, and it was right behind the old house. And so that house is still in existence there today, and just recently people have lived in it. And mountain culture.
Yeah. So how long did you go to school for?
I... It was stretched out over a period of time, but I graduated from high school in 1968 and went to Young Harris College for 2 years at the insistence of my mother, for sure. But by that time, I wanted to go. And then we got married in 1970. And I started back to school again in 1973, going to Gardner Webb. But that was such a drive for me to still come home on the weekend because I was still pastor at Little Brasstown. Okay. And I began preaching in 1969, and that year New Martins Creek Church called me as their pastor. Mm-hmm. And so I served as their pastor from 1969 to 1972, and then came to Brasstown, Little Brasstown, in 1972, and have been there since then. In 1978, Morris Hill was offering classes at Tri-County, and I actually started, they either had a business administration degree or elementary ed. And so I thought, well, I'll do elementary ed. Mm-hmm. And I followed that approach until I realized I was going to have to do a year's student teaching. Mm-hmm. And I thought, how can I take off and do a year's student teaching and still be full-time pastor? Yeah. And so I switched my major to religion and graduated in 1983 from Mars Hill University, now I think they call it, in 1983. By that time, we had 4 kids. But I found out that New Orleans Southern Baptist Seminary was offering classes in Atlanta. And I could drive down on Mondays, and they would fly professors up from New Orleans to Atlanta. And I enrolled in the master's degree program there. And I would drive down each Monday, most of the time picking up 2 classes there. Mm-hmm. And we had to go to New Orleans to get at least, I believe it was 28 hours on campus credits. Our master's degree at the seminary required us, I believe, to have maybe like 95, 98 semester hours. Mm-hmm. And so when was it I graduated from... but we would have to go to New Orleans for those on campus classes. I believe it was it 90 or 93 when I graduated? Something like that. Yeah. Close to that.
It took a lot of years.
Did you go with them to New Orleans, or did you stay up here?
Had the 4 kids here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and...
But he just went for mini masters at Christmas.
Okay, yeah.
The first week of January. Every year, and
then they would do
summer.
Sometimes in the summer, yeah. And so that I thought one time that I might do the doctorate, but I just kept getting busier and busier, and didn't pursue that.
But it was about 8 or 9 years to get the last 2 years of college, and 8 or 9 years to get the 3 years of seminary.
So yeah, it was
stretched out.
It was a lot different than being able to just do full-time school. Yeah. And so in 1983, when I got the bachelor's degree from Morris Hill, I started teaching religion classes for Tri-County. And then to keep up with the Southern Association of Schools and Colleges requirements. Mm-hmm. Tri-County was going to all teachers had to have a minimum of a master's degree. Mm-hmm. And so I had begun that work already, but I went ahead and in 1990, I guess, I had quit, had to give up the teaching at Tri-County. And in that, but from that time until, I believe it was 1993, that I received the master's degree from New Orleans Seminary. And in 1990, 1995, the person who was doing the religion classes went on to something else, and so they asked me to come back, and I kept, I did their Old Testament, New Testament introduction, Eastern and Western religions, until the spring of 2020, and finished the 2020 semester, and because of COVID and the online classes.
I was worried it wasn't recording for a second. I was like, what if I didn't press it?
I just, even though they were giving me tremendous help, they had a person who says, I had not pursued the online literacy and knowing how to do that and such. I was learning some from the person that at Tri-County that was helping me, but I just kept feeling like I was putting him out so much. But he told me, he says, you bring me what you've got, I'll put it online, and you can do your testing and your grading and that kind of thing. And but at the, in the beginning of the fall semester of 2020, I just didn't go back. And but I continued at the pastorate. And after looking back and seeing all those things that was going on, you know, I served as pastor of the church, drove a school bus, taught at Tri-County, went to school, and I look back now and say, how in the world did I do all that? And I have to remember, I was young then.
How long have you been the pastor at Little Rosemont?
51 years.
And then how long did you end up teaching overall?
I guess from 95 to 2020, what is that?
25 years,
and then 7 years prior to that, about 32 years.
Yeah, I remember taking that class.
But I guess that's about it.
What about your upbringing, Becky?
Okay. My dad was raised in Brasstown, and my mom was, they were both born in Ohio because their parents were there searching work.
Okay, yeah.
But they were, both parents were from down here, Blairsville and this area. And my parents courted on a piano bench, they say. Her dad was a preacher, and my dad's family was always in church, and her dad became the pastor of the church over here at Brasstown.
Okay.
And but my mom and dad got married and lived on a dairy farm, and he was a dairy farmer all my life. And my mom worked some at Clifton when it first came. She worked several years there.
Which is presently Moog.
Moog,
okay.
Yes. Yes, I forget that. But I was raised in a firm Christian home, wonderful Christian home, with devotions at night much of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And in church all the time. My parents led the music, taught Sunday schools and church training and GAs and RAs, and
mm-hmm.
they were our leaders as well. I mean, just, it was just a good upbringing. And I came to know the Lord as my Savior when I was 7, and just really grew in girls' auxiliary, it was called at the time. Got to go to Truett Camp. We didn't do vacations, but I did go to Truett Camp 9 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And enjoyed that part of growing and up and learning much. In Bible drill, I was in that for 4 years. You learn 52 Bible verses a year,
right.
And had drills, and we went to state, which was at Fruitland,
mm-hmm.
Every year for that. And that has helped me immensely throughout life to have those 200 verses in my heart that we drilled and drilled and drilled so long all year long. And my dad was our teacher in that. My mom was the missions leader. And in that, we learned to say the Beatitudes in the love chapter. And just much scripture still in mission learning. When I was around 14 or 15, I went to the altar one night and just felt God's call that I give my life to Him to full-time service. Mm-hmm. And in my testimony, I said, I know that God wants me to serve Him wholeheartedly. And I said, that may be to be a missionary, or it may be to be a nurse, or it could even be to be a preacher's wife. But at that time, I wasn't even called to preach. And God brought that to pass.
Yeah, she and her boyfriend, after she broke up with me, came to my ordination service.
Oh, yeah.
Because my grandmother wanted to go to his ordination service.
Oh, so were y'all dating before, and then y'all broke up and then got back together?
Yeah.
Okay. How old were y'all when y'all got back together?
Well, 15. I was 15, and he was 18.
Okay.
And, I mean, the only courting you did was you got to go maybe to town to get a Coke or an ice cream on Sunday afternoon if you double dated.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, and Sunday night to go to Hiawassee to eat a Whataburger. And that's pretty much, and going to church mm-hmm. was pretty much our dating, as long as we double dated, too. Okay. And then when I was 17, and he was 20, we got married.
She was almost 18.
Yeah, Mom and Daddy was willing to sign for me.
Close enough.
Right. And we moved to Sweetwater first and lived there for a few months and then moved on.
We were
at Martin's Creek, and then we moved to Sweetwater in the fall of that year. And then the next year, he became pastor here that next May on our anniversary week of that. But then Sherry was born, I guess, whenever I was around 20. And then we had three kids pretty close together. And then Timothy was born 5 years after the last of the three. And then when they got in school, we just always emphasized loving the Lord and learning all you could about Him and realizing that this house was not our home. This was provided for us, and we needed to be willing to be ready to go wherever God wanted us to go. Mm-hmm. When they got older, they said, you can go anywhere you want to. We've got friends. We'll stay here. They took up with a lot of the cooks.
Right.
They said, we know where we can find a place to stay. You can go wherever God sends you. But we were blessed with four who truly love Jesus and have come to know Him at a young age and are faithfully serving Him. And we praise God for that.
Yeah. How long did you go to school for?
I did all of high school. We got married the weekend I graduated.
Okay.
And he started a revival the next week. And we've been going strong on in serving the Lord there. And I guess it took me 15 years to get a 2-year secretarial degree at Tri-County.
Okay.
But I eventually got that in the 90s, or in 90, I guess, 89 or 90. And I went to work when Timothy, I guess, started to school. I began to work some with the secretarial degree when I graduated in 89, I guess, and worked at Moab part-time, mornings. And then I got a job as a pharmacy tech in 90, and by then all the kids were in school, and Ald was real busy with school and teaching and driving and all the many things he was involved in.
Revivals
and the work of the church. One year he did 17 weeks of being gone every night.
Oh, wow.
And So I just raised kids mm-hmm. and worked of a day. Mm-hmm. And I worked in pharmacy for 30 years as a pharmacy tech at Parker's Drug for 23 and at mm-hmm. Fred's for 4 years and then at King's for two at Hazel. And then retired 2 years ago. Okay. Got to do that. And now I get to do whatever God has in store for today.
That's good. So what was y'all's relationship to Annie Bell? How would y'all describe it?
I had gotten to know your grandpa from preaching in revivals mm-hmm. and some of the other cooks as well. And they are, of course, as you know, a very large family.
Yeah.
And so they just sort of took us in as family and treated us as such. Your grandfather became a very dear friend, and I recognized him as a spiritual leader, always being around him, which then involved us with Annabelle Cook, his mama, and they were always having a prayer meeting in her house. Mm-hmm. And we would have prayer meetings there at her house. And also, there was always something good to eat and a rook game if you wanted to get involved in that. And of course, we all did. When I became pastor here at Brasstown, this was, I always call her Granny Bell.
Mm-hmm.
She was a member at Little Brasstown Church and had been just very faithful to Little Brasstown Church. And of course, that tied in with me being pastor here also. And one of the stories I remember her telling is she had a favorite preacher and his wife from the past, Ham, Coffee, and
Molly.
And I can remember her saying one time that Ham had told her that, you know, he just really couldn't feel the spirit down at Brasstown like he did at some other churches. And she said, I just told him right then, said, well, that's strange because I feel the spirit every time I go there because I take him with me. but, you know, it led to a wider range of people that I got to know through the cooks, and then realizing how big the family really was and that a lot of them were in Oregon mm-hmm. and had been out there in the timber business. And then Bill and Barbara moved back here in 1973. I guess your grandfather Francis had been out there earlier, but he and Hazel had moved back here earlier or sooner than Bill and Barbara did. Granny Bell was always a tremendous supporter of me. And somewhere along, I guess in about 1970, early 70s, I would have to say, that Southern Baptists were having Good News America revivals across the nation. And they were encouraging churches to become involved with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And the children of Granny Bell Cook that was out in Oregon, of course, I always received greater accolades and honors from the Cook family. And of course, they shared with the folks in Oregon, and so the pastor out there wanted me to come out there and preach in a Good News America revival. And so several of the folk, including Granny Bell, your grandfather Francis, I don't know if Hazel went or not, but Hoyt and Alice Palmer, Granny Bell, Helen Hogsett, who was a daughter of Granny Bell, of course. We all loaded up on a plane and headed out to Oregon. It's my first time ever to fly. Wow. And I never will forget, everybody was doing all these horrible things to me about it being my first flight. Mm-hmm. And Granny Bell, she would always say, "Oh, Pastor, oh, don't worry anything about that." It says, you know, "We're going to do the Lord's work and He's going to be with us, so just don't worry about the flight." And Hoyt Palmer had told me, he says, "Now, everything will be fine." He says, "Most of the crashes happen when you're taking off or landing, one or the other." And he says, "Now, when that pilot turns the plane up in the air," he says, "he can turn that thing up too quickly. And if he does, the tail will drag and you're certainly going to crash." Wow. Well, I didn't know that also when the pilot really turned that plane up, that they would bring the landing gear up also. Mm-hmm. And it had a screeching sound to it. Oh, no. And Hoyt had said to me, "If you hear that screeching sound," which of course I did, he says, "you know that we're not going to make it." So Hoyt and Alice was sitting up a few seats in front of me. And just when those landing gears started coming up, Hoyt turned and looked at me with the awfulest look on his face of horror, you know. And then he laughed. He saw what it had done to me already. But I always say that also in that first trip, that I drove this one young, beautiful young lady to drinking, because on the way from Atlanta to Chicago, we hit some turbulence. Mm-hmm. And when we hit that, I just grabbed my seat like this. She was sitting beside me, and she immediately turned to a flight attendant, but she said, "Bring me a drink." She downed that one and said, "Bring me another one."
Oh, no.
But it was a great time together to get to meet the kids out in Oregon. It was just getting to know the rest of the family, I guess you would say. And what a great week that was. And then I went to... after that, I guess, even that little church asked me if I would come back and be their pastor. But I didn't feel like I should go at that time. And
that would have been quite a trip.
Yeah. Yeah. Different world. And it was really good getting to stay with some of the family out there. Bert Cook's children, his oldest daughter and her husband, who recently died, the husband did. Mm-hmm. And getting to know others of the family, it was just, it was really good. And then, I guess, in a year after that, Sam Cook, one of the brothers, took down with cancer, and your grandfather and I, we went back out to visit him. And then after that, when he got worse and died, he had told the family he would like for me to come back and do his funeral. And that was the best flight I think I ever, of all the ones I had, because I knew that definitely that was God's will for me to go do that. And I thought, like Granny Bell did, this is in the hands of the Lord. Just don't worry about it. But, you know, she was always faithful to church. We had those prayer meetings at her home. Wherever I was in revival, she would find some way basically of getting there. And she became a strong encourager for me as a pastor.
Y'all, do you remember how old you were when you met her? Were y'all married already? Or?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I guess I was in my early to mid-20s when I first met Granny Bell.
So that's about the time you became friends with Papaw?
Do what?
Was that about the time you became friends with my Papaw?
Yeah, a little bit earlier, because I can remember maybe in something like my first year of preaching, maybe 1969, mm-hmm. I helped Hoyt Brown in revival. He helped me in revival at New Martins Creek, mm-hmm. because I still pastored there. And then I went over to Notley Baptist Church and helped him in revival. And of course, since your grandfather Francis was there, Granny Bell was not going to miss the opportunity to be in a revival. Mm-hmm. And so she came there, and I began to get acquainted with her then, somewhat, and with your grandfather as well. He's got some wonderful stories, some wonderful testimonies to tell, mm-hmm. that I never will forget either, some of his experiences.
Mm-hmm. About you, Becky, what do you remember?
Well, with Granny Bell's family, as she raised them there at Brasstown, I was raised at Brasstown too all my life, young life, and so always knew, don't know when, mm-hmm. that I really recognized that I knew Granny Bell, but I guess one of my first weddings I think that I remember ever being at was at your grandparents' wedding. Yes, I can still see them coming across the parking lot to the church, and I can envision that right now. Mm-hmm. I've known the family. I grew up with Rob's kids and Eb and Mon's kids a lot. We were at least really got to build relationships in Bible school, 2 weeks of Bible school every year. So, like Robin says, we used to be horseshoe partners. Okay. Is how you can remember, used to remember each other. But with those kids, I grew up with them. I wasn't in Granny Bell's home that I can really recall until prayer meeting times in the 70s, yeah. when we went most every Saturday night to have prayer meetings at her home. She was so gracious to receive us and to always make us welcome, and so very kind, mm-hmm. to us there. And then with her family, intermingled with them in that, with Arville's kids and Alma's kids and Helen's and Bill's, our kids all grew up together, mm-hmm. and schools and church work and, mm-hmm. and different interactions in different places. Alice's too, and maybe some more of them. But
Tim, Alma and Bill's family just sort of adopted him, and he grew up thinking he was Cook, that his last was Cook.
He went home with them most Saturday nights, okay. to spend the night. And then he and Alma played Pac-Man till 2 or 3 in the morning, and they'd be late to church.
Oh, no.
So they'd get there for preaching, but they might miss Sunday school.
Was he friends with their kids, or was he just like...
He went home. He was about the age of
Jessica.
Okay. But he just went home with them,
yeah.
because the kids played out and romped the hills. Yeah. during prayer meeting time till prayer time. And he thought he needed to go home with them about every Saturday night. And yeah. Then he, when it was such a rude awakening to him, find out he wasn't even kin to him.
Well, we're kin to a lot of people, so it wouldn't be surprised for any of us.
Right, but that was a real shocker to him.
So, in y'all's opinion, what role did religion play in Annie Bell's life? Like, what was her, how did y'all see it, I guess, in her life?
You know, in my perspective of it, that was the most important thing in her life. Mm-hmm. That's what her life revolved around, was Christian faith and going to church and going to revivals and wanting to be there. It's different than having to be there. Mm-hmm. Is something that she just loved dearly. Mm-hmm. Loved the Lord and His kingdom's work, and I'd say it was the number one priority in her life.
She kept her testament handy, her New Testament handy. It was in her hand or in her pocket.
Yeah, and the thing that amazes me, her eyesight began to get a bit dim. Mm-hmm. And, of course, she prayed about that. Someone had a little booklet, like the size of a book of matches. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the print was not too big in that. And I, it seemed like it just had different verses in it. But I know she said to me one time, she says, I want you to see something. She says, God has blessed my eyes. And she says, I can read this print in this little booklet, this little Bible. And so she just went to reading it for me. Wow. And she had a genuine relationship with God.
Mm-hmm. She loved for prayer to be made in her home.
Yeah.
It had an open door.
I've often thought maybe, you know, she raised tobacco. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I gave it to one of the grandkids or somebody, or if I've still got it in there, but of course, the as she got older, the some of the kids would help get her tobacco patch plowed and everything ready to be set out, tobacco plants to be set out, and but I can see her, you know, being on her knees a lot in that tobacco patch. And I'm sure there was a lot of praying going on then while she was down there, because she had a lot to pray about for all of her kids and grandchildren and so forth. But Tim and I have raised tobacco some. I helped a little bit with my family at home in raising tobacco too. But when I would cut tobacco, I had like a short axe, mm-hmm. light axe, and I'd catch the tobacco here and cut it. It had a longer handle in it. But she would use like a hunting knife, mm-hmm. to cut her tobacco with. And she gave me one of those old knives one time. And I either have gotten it in here or might have given it to one of the grandchildren after her death or something, mm-hmm. Or even one of the children. But how did I get off on that now? But I guess what I was going to say was, I just felt like that in my own mind, I could see her being there on her knees, working in tobacco, and then having to be bent over or either on her knees to take that knife and hit that stalk of tobacco near the root and cut it down.
Do you remember her, like, when she started tobacco, or did she just always have it when you knew her?
When I knew her, she had always been doing that.
Is that common in this area?
It was. It My was. My family had a tobacco allotment.
Okay. Did she have an allotment?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how did the allotment thing work? Like,
it was based upon, you had to apply for it through the county farm service office. And I don't know just exactly, I guess according to your family need or something, it might be a larger amount or a less amount mm-hmm. in its earliest beginnings. Mm-hmm. And about, it was a government supplemented kind of thing too. Mm-hmm. It all was based with government requirements and so on and so forth. and I don't know how large her allotment was. Finally, and gosh, I've forgotten, I guess somewhere maybe around 2000 or something, yeah. the government moved out of that totally.
I think it was like around 2005 or something like that. I'd read about it.
Yeah. And so a lot, it was just a tremendous number of people. Mm-hmm. It was a real staple income for people. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of changes in it in the years just before the government disassociated themselves from it. There are still people who could raise tobacco, but they didn't have the allotment system back then.
Okay. So did y'all notice a lot of women working in tobacco, like
mm-hmm.
a lot?
Yeah, I hoed many a tobacco row.
Yeah.
And topped it and mm-hmm. suckered it. And handed it off and tied it. That was one of our crops.
What kind of tobacco was it? Was it like a specific?
Burley tobacco. Okay. Down on the coast or farther down east in North Carolina, it was a lot more flue-cured, they called it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that was a long time before most people felt it was a sin mm-hmm. to either dip snuff or chew tobacco or smoke.
Right.
And then, of course, when the years came along where that, you know, that tobacco was a great cause of cancer and such, and regulations being put on tobacco. That's one thing about Granny Bell. She always dipped her snuff. Mm-hmm. She was not only a raiser of the product, but she encouraged the economy by dipping snuff. And I grew up with, you know, my family, that was a part of their life too. And but it has changed a lot.
Mm-hmm. None of our family smoked, but both my grandmothers dipped snuff.
My papa falls asleep with his pipe sometimes, so. So y'all mentioned a few times about like her big family and stuff like that. Was a family that size like usual around here, in your opinion, or was it kind of?
The Cook family, Granny Bell's family, was somewhat unusual. There were other, a few here and there that maybe had several children. 10, 12 children or so. It really wasn't uncommon for a family to have 5 or 6 kids, maybe even 7. Families were larger, but hers was quite unusual to have as many as she did, and to have 5 stepchildren also, mm-hmm. along with her own children that she delivered.
So she had the 5 stepchildren. So do you know who he was married to before her?
No, I don't.
Yeah. Okay. I heard they were around the same age as her. Is
that mm-hmm. that she was, it was like she was one of the kids. Yeah.
Yeah, I think
she was young.
I think she was 13 when she and Theodore got married.
I've been told it's around 15. I'm not
15?
Yeah.
She was young.
She was young.
Mm-hmm. Was that usual around that time, do you think, like getting married younger?
You know, I think back at that time, probably it would have been more common for people to get married around 16 years old. Mm-hmm. Seems like that was... I was trying to think of when my mother and dad got married. mother would have probably been 16, 17 years old when she and dad got married.
And there were just 11 grades in school and not even kindergarten then. Okay.
So what would y'all say was the role of the church in this area around Abel's lifetime, you think?
I think there was a real God consciousness even from people who did not embrace Christian faith or attend church. They may have known, I feel like that they did know that there's a right and there's a wrong. Mm-hmm. And I'm not following the right if I'm not serving God and being a part of church. It's like in one revival I was in one time, Fred Lunsford was preaching and I was leading the singing over at Mount Pisgah Church. But there were some lost people in the community that Fred wanted us to go visit. And I remember visiting with this one man, lived close to the church, but never attended church. And finally, in our talk with him, it was just that the Lord laid these things on my heart. And I just said to him, I said, do you have a Bible? Oh, yes, sir, I have a Bible. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, it must mean something to you. Oh, yes, that's God's word. I know it is. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, if you know that's God's word and you have the opportunity of holding it in your hands, why don't you just accept the God that the Bible talks about? Mm-hmm. And he just didn't have a response for that. But that was the way it was. Even people who were not churched or part of a church, anything like that, they still believed in God and in the Bible. They just didn't want to make the commitment for whatever reasons. I guess because they had certain things in their life that they felt like they could not give up, mm-hmm. even though they knew that it was what God wanted a person to do. And that maybe sometime in their life they would do it. Mm-hmm. But it was the church in those years, there was a much different feeling about it from the general public.
You think the same? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do y'all feel like it's changed now, in the present time?
Yeah. And I think part of that has to do with children not being taught. It seems like our society today has gotten so busy, and parents many times are just really tied up with their work, mm-hmm. trying to make a living for their family, trying to do better for their family maybe than the previous generation had done financially or economically. And I believe kids missed that home life of emphasis on the Bible and Christian faith than we have today.
So y'all talked about like y'all's family's closeness with the Cook family and stuff, and about how you were close with my papa and stuff. Were y'all close with any of the like other members of the family, you think?
Yeah. For me, you know, I guess the Cooks that I knew here were your grandfather Francis and Hazel, and Orville and Carol Ann. Mm-hmm. In fact, Carol Ann and I went to school together.
Okay.
We graduated from high school together. I knew Bill and Alma, mm-hmm. their family, and Hoyt and Alice. Helen, it took me a while to put it all together that Helen was a sister to the Cooks. But and then later on, of course, as I mentioned a while ago, getting acquainted with some of the fellows in Oregon by going out there and them coming out here.
Are you still in touch with any of the family out there?
No, not really. After all the children of Granny Bell, her boys out there died, and I just sort of lost touch with the next generation to some degree, except to hear something about their families through the children of Granny Bell back here.
Yeah. Did you have anyone you were specifically close to?
Well, we've been very close to Bill and Barbara. They've been active in the church here at Brasstown. And then Alma and Bill, when they moved back with their kids and had the rest of their kids, yes, we've been very close to them and to Alice, too, with Helen and their family in sports at Hayesville when our kids were growing up, and in community things, too. Arville and Carol Ann's kids, we didn't see them as much if they weren't, when they were in church at Brasstown, we did, but if they were at a different place, we wouldn't see them much. But yes, we've had close relationships. And then Mon's kids, Brenda and I are good friends, and just with any of her kids, when I see them, we just pick up on friendships where we left off. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yes, just many of them. Rob's kids, I delight in seeing them when I see them.
And Rob, that's maybe one of the people we don't mention a lot, but I'd love to hear Rob tell stories about when he was in service. And mm-hmm. I think he had been left for dead two times, even had a dead tag on him. Mm-hmm. And somebody happened to notice that he was still alive when he was picked up for dead. And he and I, he would, oh, a few different times would want me to take him and go visit in the Veterans Hospital at Asheville.
Do you know what war he served in?
Do what?
Did you know what war he served in?
World War II.
Did she have a lot of kids served?
I know that Rob did, I believe Frank did, and I don't know about the other boys. I know Bill was in, I believe Bill was in the National Guard, and Arville was, I believe Arville maybe was in the Marines. But I don't know how many of them were in service in wartime. Rob, in one of those times, if I remember correctly, when he had been wounded and left for dead, there were some preachers that were real close to the family at that time, like Carl Cunningham and Mandy, his wife, and Ham Coffey and his wife, Molly. Mm-hmm. And I remember him telling me one time that he could actually hear them praying for him. Mm-hmm. And he really believed that that's how he revived and was able to come home alive. And boy, we had a wonderful experience out in the hospital there, Veterans Hospital, Asheville. Oteen, I think they really call it, the town. But I went out to see him one day when he was in the hospital out there. And he says, look, he says, I've got somebody we need to talk to in here. They need to be saved. And so we went down to another suite where there were several people in this one room area, large room. And we talked to this man about being saved and had prayer with him, but he didn't acknowledge at the time anything of accepting Christ as his Savior. But then when Rob, the next time I talked with him, or maybe he called me, and he said, "I just wanted you to know that while we were talking with that one man, there was this other man in the room that was hearing everything. And he prayed when we prayed and was saved." And he told Rob later, told his family, and his family, I guess, told Rob and says, "You know, he's back home," and says, "he's just telling everybody about what happened to him here." Just such good experiences.
We failed to mention a while ago, Frank, that they've been in our church in Lorraine, we're at the church much, and their daughter Glenda is very faithful Sunday morning and Sunday night, Glenda Clayton. And then Joe Cook, that's gone on to be with the Lord. We helped raise three of their girls for 3 years, and one of them moved in and stayed with us during the rest of her senior year that year, and then we were her home base while she went to college to Gardner Webb. And she just texted me this morning.
Is that? She was...
Oh, I wrote it down.
She really wanted to go to school.
She's like one of
ours. Her daddy didn't particularly want her to, but she begged him into letting her stay here and graduate from Murphy High School. And then during that time, we had been working with her to get in school somewhere. Yeah. And it turned out to be Gardner Webb, and that's where she met her present husband.
Okay.
And what is that?
He's a pastor down in Atlanta, and she works at the largest independent school in Atlanta down near the airport. And she just got awarded in a magazine one of the top 100 influencers in EdTech nationally for 23-24. Wow. In the minds behind what's now and what's next.
That's really cool.
Yeah. But she goes and she is instrumental in accreditation in places, and helps, I guess, helps places get accredited for different things.
And she had majored in chemistry at Gardner Webb. And she went the route of sales initially, but then her husband, he was a biology major. And eventually she turned more to technology.
Mm-hmm.
And so
she learned how to use the computer to help teach in the classroom. And when they moved to Atlanta, they didn't have it in those classrooms where she applied for jobs.
Okay.
And she said, "Okay, if I can I teach this in the school? If I can get IBM to come into the school, will the school be willing?" So she got a job with IBM, and she got a job with the school in teaching the teachers.
Interesting.
In the school system.
It was good.
And she has written some IBM lessons, and then she goes to training workshops in India or Singapore.
Wow.
She was in Los Angeles last week.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how would y'all describe Annabelle's relationship with her family, like as a mother, like a wife or a grandmother?
They revered her.
They really did. They looked at her as boss.
In all ways. I mean, spiritually, but yes, as mother and head of the household after Mr. Cook was gone, they honored her.
Do y'all remember when Mr. Cook passed away?
I might faintly recall that, but I'm not sure that I do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember exactly when he died. It was before my acquaintance with the family, and probably even before I had been called to preach. But I remember your grandfather talking about when he died, that he had told them, "I've got one." I've got one boy that's never been saved. And you don't bury me till that boy has been saved. And of course, Arville was living a very sinful life, we would say, in church, and not being a part of church. And so everybody assumed it was Arville. And then you're, well, you know that story.
It's okay.
Your grandfather, he realized that he had never really been saved. And he got saved. Arville, I was close to him in a lot of ways, and he respected me as a preacher very much so. I was at their house a lot praying for them, and in those days when he was very much away from God. I think he would have done anything to have got me caught by the law so that I would have to go to jail or something. He would, when we would go to Granny Bell's for prayer meeting, he would come in and he would start talking about what a sorry, low-down person I was, you know. Mm-hmm. And boy, Granny Bell would take up for me and her. She says, "You don't talk about him like you're lying. I know you're lying. You just as well to be quiet."
She did. She
did. Did y'all ever know her to pull any pranks or anything like that? Do y'all ever hear anything?
Yes, she loved to get those little, what do they call them? Things that you throw at people's feet.
Little poppers.
Poppers. She liked to have those poppers.
Did she ever throw them at y'all?
Uh-uh.
Okay.
I'm sure I've had one or two thrown at me just as an excitement for the moment.
Does she ever have any hobbies that y'all seen, or something she could be found doing?
Quilting.
And canning, storing up food. One of the times I can remember, she used churns, but she kept wanting a big barrel like they had had years ago. And it so happened that I knew, at that time they weren't as available, what I would call a 60-gallon liquor barrel. The wooden barrel that had been used for aging whiskey. And I had stopped at an old general store over in Tennessee one time, and they had those. Mm-hmm. And so Bill and I went over there, and we bought a couple. I've still got my old barrel out there in the shed. Or I did have, if I hadn't thrown it away, I don't know. But anyway, she pickled a whole barrel of corn.
Wow.
And I know when we would go for prayer meeting, it just had a cloth over the top of it, you know. I can remember just reaching in there and, you know, just getting an ear of corn and bringing it out and shaking it off and eating an ear of pickled corn. But she did, boy, she canned everything in the world. Any kind of food stuff and meat even. I think that canning, quilting, such things as would have been a life sustaining thing prior to several years ago for us now, and especially in this day and time in which we're living. It was a real art.
So y'all talked a few times about the prayer meetings, and I've been to one when I was little and stuff, but like, what were the process? Because I don't know if it's the same, I guess, that's when I went. But I don't know, like, what were, like...
They were called cottage prayer meetings.
Okay.
Back in the day, is a term.
And they could be more formal or less formal, mm-hmm. for, quote, I should say. Because the formal idea would be that...
be open to anybody from the church to come.
Yeah, open to anybody to come, but there you would be expecting there to be preaching and singing and praying. And then there were the times when we gathered together, mm-hmm. and it was less formal, we might say, where we gathered around, we milled around, we talked, and then people began to give testimonies about their relationship to the Lord, and then prayer requests involved with that, and then just praying.
Mm-hmm. So were any of those more formal or informal?
There was some of both.
Okay.
Some of both. Sometimes it was designated. So-and-so's going to be here, and they're going to preach. And then other times you didn't know who was going to be there, and maybe some one of them would preach, but it was still a, more so in a less... organized way, we might say.
Okay. So you also mentioned like way earlier about like moonshine in the area and stuff. Did y'all ever know any of Grannyville's family or anything to be involved?
The only stories I have heard the only things I know is what I have heard, of mm-hmm. course. And I have heard her tell the story too about this. They live down on the other side of Murphy, down toward Unaka in that area. Mm-hmm. I think that's where her husband came from, Mr. Cook. Mm-hmm. Granny Bell, boy, she was really opposed to drinking alcohol. And there was this one man, mm-hmm. if I remember right, I believe it's Ralph Dockery, she told him, she had turned in somebody's steel, mm-hmm. where they were making liquor. And she told him, she says, "And when I find your steel, I'm going to turn it in too." And he says, "Bill Cook, you turn in my steel and I will kill you." Mm-hmm. And she found his steel and she turned him in. And he came to her then in tears and said, "Bill, why did you do this?" But it seemed like they respected her, mm-hmm. knowing that she stood for the right, mm-hmm. and that they were in the wrong. And eventually Ralph Dockery was saved. Mm-hmm. And I know some of the family probably can tell that story a lot better than I do, but that's the basis of it.
I never heard that one. I've heard some stuff about her turning people into stones and stuff.
And then there was a preacher. He became a preacher, but he was a bootlegger in Murphy. And I believe, if I remember correctly, Ernie Young, and became a wonderful country pastor here. But I think maybe Ernie was saved at her house.
Oh, wow.
And Granny Bell loved his wife too, so very much. And Ernie became a good pastor of churches around here. And he would tell stories. I've heard him tell a few about being at Bell Cook's house and having such a good prayer meeting. Mm-hmm. Ernie, he didn't get all of his words correctly pronounced. I guess he had a lot of mountain brogue too, but for confess, he always just said fess. What people need to do is to fess up.
Mm-hmm.
they need to repent of their sins. But he was a good man. Preached one of the finest sermons I ever heard at a funeral. He and I had a funeral together in later years. And his message that day was on our hope. And he preached on hope. And I thought, Lord, I have never heard anything better in all my life. And it was the spirit of it that really would capture your attention.
Does your tape about out?
No, I can go for like 74 hours. It's good. Y'all can talk as long as y'all want to. So what would y'all consider Annabelle's role in her community? Or was her community like the church community or what? Like, was there a larger community than just the church community at the time?
Yeah, I think... instead of it just being the church community, it was the community at large, and not just where she lived, but...
which we called Cook Holler.
Yeah. But she had a general acquaintance with a lot of people, and some of that, I guess, was connections through her children, but also through her life early on with Mr. Cook, and then even with her children later on in their relationship with people. There's one story, and I don't know if you would, this might have to do a little bit with culture, but there were certain things back in those days that were a real embarrassment for people to have to acknowledge. And the son who told me this swore that he'd kill me if I ever say anything about it. So I'm just going to say, hey, son. But he said, and lice. Today, you know, kids go off to school. They come home with the lice. You go get medicine for it and get rid of the lice and so forth. But it was, people had the general idea if you had lice, it was because you were just nasty, dirty. Hygiene was not good and whatever. And
now the sign they send home with you says, it's not a shame to get it, it's just a shame to keep it.
So, but that was the whole idea behind it. It was such a an embarrassing kind of thing, really humiliating to know that you had the lice. And this son told me that one of his sisters was just eat up with the lice. And he said, now look, he said, I said, I didn't have a lice on me. And he was clearing himself. But he said, Granny Bell told him, and they lived here at Brasstown, and the only way he could do this was to walk to Murphy. She said, you go to Murphy, to Parker's drugstore, and get me some blue ointment for the lice. And he said, I didn't want to do that. He said it was just embarrassing to go do that. But he said, I got to Murphy. And he says, I walked on the street in front of the drugstore. I put it off just as long as I could. And he says, I knew that Granny Bell would give me one more good thrashing if I didn't come home with blue ointment. And so he said, I finally went in and told him, says, my mama sent me down here to get some blue ointment. Our neighbors have the lice.
Neighbor.
I thought, man, that was just so good. And he said the druggist, the pharmacist, just sort of smiled. And he says, now as I look back on it, I knew that he knew who had the lice.
Oh. No tricking him.
That was another thing, too. This would go back to culture some and the various beliefs that in Christian faith. That when Granny Bell worked in the tobacco mm-hmm. or outside, whatever she was doing, there was this thing that people really had a stigma about, that women should not wear men's clothing, mm-hmm. and that meant women do not wear pants, mm-hmm. Not realizing that when the Bible was written, that men at that time would have been wearing more like a flowing garment rather than pants like we do today. But boy, women were not allowed to wear pants at church, or if you were really devoted anywhere, women just didn't wear pants. Mm-hmm. But when she worked in the tobacco, she would have on a pair of pants with a dress over it. And I thought, man, that's all right.
We've covered most of my questions.
Good.
Do y'all remember when she... Did y'all go to her funeral when she passed away? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Did I do that by myself, or... I'm sure there was some other people, maybe me and Hoyt. And Ham was dead by that time, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. And Ernie and Carl Cunningham, preachers that had been dear to her over the years, you know. But it was, I guess I'd just have to look back to see what the particulars now were of that service. If I remember right, I believe that she lay in state at Brasstown Church, and overnight, back in those days, it wasn't unusual. Mm-hmm. Well, it would have been at this particular time when she died, mm-hmm. but in years prior to that, it wasn't an unusual thing if a family member died for you to bring them home with you. And the funeral home would dress them and put them in a casket, and then they would bring them to the house, and you would expect there to be at least a day or two before a person would be buried, and gave a better opportunity for people to find out that so-and-so had died, mm-hmm. and they would be able to come to the home and express their condolences and just be with the family a little bit. But when Granny Bell died, there was a whole lot of getting away from that. Mm-hmm. And it was just the beginning of a thing that is more popular today, more common today, yeah, than it was then. A lot of people bring a deceased family member to their church, and they might have the visitation there, mm-hmm. and for friends to come and such, and then leave the body overnight at the church. And I can remember when she did die that it was hard to break away from that. And of course, we had the what year did she die in? Do you remember, Becky?
I guess around 1995, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. I believe...
It would have been in the new church.
Yeah, it would have been in the new church, new sanctuary then. But I know that there were some who were thinking about staying all night. And maybe they did. I don't recall that. I think they did, though, and because I know that I was there to real late. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what I was, the funeral service and all. But it was a time, you know, hard for the family. She was a matriarch for sure, of the family, and it wasn't easy for them to turn loose and let her go, even though they knew she had gone on to heaven.
Do y'all know of anything, like, I know the 20th century, so there's a lot of stuff that happened that she lived through, so like the Great Depression and things like that. Do you know any stories of, like how those kind of big events impacted her, so like the wars, maybe the Civil Rights Movement, anything like that?
Granny Bell just never would give up on the fact that mankind had gone to the moon. She was a flat earth person. She felt that moon landing was, they just landed that spacecraft out there somewhere in the desert.
Okay.
And she had expressed that to me at different times. And of course, who was I to rebuke her? I wasn't about to do that and say, well, I wouldn't even say I really think they went to the moon, you know. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that the war with her having kids, Frank and Rob, I know.
Well, she would have lived through World War One, two, Vietnam War, the Korean Wars.
Yeah.
Any signs of like how that impacted her throughout her life?
Not really that much, just from the stories that I have been told, particularly about World War II, and Rob telling me about World War II. But it was a thing that they just, that from Granny Bell's perspective, is that this is something that has to be or has been brought about, and so we've got to pray our way through this. Mm-hmm. And the other wars, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm.
Y'all were alive during the Civil Rights Movement and stuff like that. What did y'all see an impact in this area? In that?
Yeah, some. Mm-hmm. But because of our, the Civil Rights Movement, to me, seemed to be more associated with white people and black people. Mm-hmm. The other ethnicities or ethnic groups had not really been brought into that yet, not even so much as the Native Americans. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have a lot of black people in this area. Mm-hmm. But I do know when they were attempting to integrate schools, there were some, you know, fights in the school in Cherokee County. In Clay County, we even had less black Americans in Clay County. Mm-hmm. And for our school, there, as best of my remembrance, there were three boys that came into the school system up there. And that was because when they went to, these kids had gone to school, two of them had gone to Texana to school. We had a bus that hauled them to Murphy, and they'd gone to the eighth grade, I think, for 12 years, to finish out 12 years, because if I remember correctly, they only had through the eighth grade there. Okay. Not sure. But then they came into Clay County schools, and one of them did not stay very long, but his brother stayed a while longer. And then we had one boy that had his family had been able to get him off to school in Tuckasegee, I believe. But he fit in with folks more than the other two boys did. But it wasn't. There was some feelings that took place in Clay and Cherokee County, even though it wasn't to the magnitude that it was in some of the larger populated areas where there were Black Americans.
I went to Ogden School the first 8 years, like kids going to Martins Creek School. Okay. And we didn't have any other color.
How old were you when that was around?
I guess I was probably around 15, 16 years old. Some of that was going to be mainly like in 65, 66. And then when was Dr. Martin Luther King killed? Was that 68?
In the 60s, yeah.
It was a big thing for our whole nation, but it impacted us less because of the fewer African American people that lived in the area. And I really didn't have any prejudice in my heart for them. I just felt like they were people of a different color, even though I had heard them called the N-word and things of this nature. It was an effort for us to, I can remember knowing that there were a lot of people who, and as a kid, you grew up not thinking anything about it, of names they were called and such. But I never really did have that feelings toward them. And then I'm glad that I didn't, especially now because of some friends that I have are African American, and we have two grandsons and a granddaughter from Ethiopia.
Granddaughter from Kazakhstan.
Yeah, from Kazakhstan. So that, I don't know. It didn't impact our area as much.
Cook family have been a friend to us and family to us. Our family to us.
Yeah, our family to us. I'm sure that if we were together a jam session with some of the family, that a lot of things would come back that I hadn't thought of at my age now. There's a lot of times it just takes a little something to jog my memory and get on a roll then. But I guess I would just say that that Granny Bell and her family have really been just family to us, and they are a generous people, and always have been toward me. I remember your grandfather. I was getting ready to. It'd been around Christmas, and I was getting ready to go to New Orleans for a class down there. I was in New Orleans several times on New Year's Eve for a class down there. And I never will forget that Francis had gone to prayer meeting there one night. And it wasn't... $50 back in that time was more like $500, I guess, now. Mm-hmm. And I was getting ready to go, and he followed me out to the car and gave me $50. And he said, I just felt like the Lord wanted me to do this. And it certainly was a blessing. And I've heard him, have you ever heard him tell the story about when he drove the RC truck? Mm-hmm. And had been by, there was an old preacher and his wife that ran a little store down in the Hiawassee Down area. And I went with him one day. He said, I think I need to go visit them. So he and I went to see them. And he had, I believe he had a $20 bill. He was telling me this story. And when he stopped there to see if they needed more drinks, they got to talking, and he found out about the hard time they were having. And he gave them the $20 he had, the last $20 he had. And he said when he got back to town, he didn't know what he was going to do, mm-hmm. because Hazel had particularly told him to get milk and something else, grocery-wise, and bring home. And he said, I didn't have any money to get it with. Mm-hmm. And he said, I parked my truck, and my drink truck, and was walking to my truck. And somebody, he said, and you know, it's getting late, you know, and beginning to get dusk dark and such. And he said, somebody hollered at me and said, hey, cook. And he said, I just stopped and turned around. And he said, this fella came on up to me. And he said, you know, I owe you $25. And I've got it now that I can pay up. And he was able to get the groceries. But I can just see Francis, you know, being in that position and not ever having thought anything else about it. Mm-hmm. But very generous people. Love the Lord, love people, and love doing the right thing.
Well, thank you all for talking to me.
Well, glad to. It's been good to... get to remember some of those things.